So for anyone that isn't aware of it, this is in fact talking about requirements and specifications. If you think you're in the Twitter talk, they're two doors down. If you think you're in some other talk, I can't help you. I generally expect that people are supposed to participate in my talk, so that means you are allowed to heckle, you're expected to heckle, and the odds are very, very good that I'm actually going to start waving hands and pointing at people. Right, Mark? Louder.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, what are we talking about in general? Why you'd bother with these things? Because, you know, this is all paperwork, and paperwork kind of sucks, and it's all the stuff that people that aren't technical do and then inflict on us. So talking a bit about the theory behind how you want all this stuff to fit together, the practice of how you put it together, and then reality, which, of course, as we all know, maps exactly to theory. See? So why bother? You know, strange as it may sound, it's kind of useful to know what you're trying to do. It's also kind of useful for other people to know what you're trying to do. Also, why you're trying to do it, how you're going to do it, who's doing it, and how can you actually tell that you're done? Which is a little minor technical detail, because amazingly enough, a lot of people can't say, I'm actually done doing what I'm doing. And if you're tired of being invisible or in trouble, having requirements and specifications mean you can go back and say, hey, look, this is what I did. Isn't it cool? It all worked. And there's tangible evidence of what I've done. So, theory. Quick and dirty description. Goals, why are you doing it? Requirements, how can you tell that you've actually met the goals in the first place? Specifications are how you meet the requirements. Implementation is doing the work. Review is making sure that what you actually did turns out to actually meet what you started out with, which again tends to be a technical detail in a lot of cases. And then, of course, completion, which is lovely. So there are some people here who have heard me say more than once, so what problem are you really trying to solve? I mean, okay, fine, I gather that you really, really, really desperately want to do that, but surely there's actually something you're aiming for. Why are you doing this? What are you trying to do? Not the solution you're trying to come up with. And when you're talking about what your problem is, you need requirements, because it's nice to have a goal, but unless you can say how to get there, you're just SOL. So what's success? What are the limitations? Again, if you say that the sky's the limit, we're not all Google. We can't all do everything we want to do. So who's involved? How can you tell you're done? Specifications, again, how we meet the requirements. They're detailed, they're specific, they're prescriptive. And that's where most of us fall down between getting from goals to specifications. We presume that the specification is a requirement because we tend to be a little bit detail-oriented. Implementation, I'm going to actually end up waving my hands about completely during this talk because we're not actually talking about implementation. We're talking about requirements and specifications. So do stuff, build it, test it, make sure you can roll it out in production. It's all great. And then, now that we've got everything out in production, I wish it was so easy most of the time. Did we actually do what we said we'd do? Did we meet the requirements? Did we follow the specifications? Or do we have something completely and utterly different? And of course, when we're done, we have the lovely beachfront, everything's coming up roses, life is good. So who thinks this is actually the case? So in practice, where do we get these things, how do we get good and bad things, and how do we think it should be working? So in terms of bang for your buck, when you're talking about requirements and specifications, and by the way, if I talk too fast, wave at me and slow me down. I tend to talk quickly when I practice, and I tend to talk even more quickly when I speak. So bang for your buck when you're talking about things like requirements and specifications. I'm sticking this at the very front because this is important. And in many ways more important than what you end up writing for requirements and specifications. When you're doing this sort of thing, you really want to participate. If you don't want to have a requirement or a specification inflicted on you from above or below or sideways, you actually have to say, yeah, okay, I know I get to sit in boring meetings and talk about whatever the hell it is you want to talk about interminably, but the bit of boredom is worth the effect at the end. cooperation, actually showing up for the meeting in question, or even, God help us, calling them. Anyone here call meetings? I think that's actually almost 50% of the room. How many of you also have pointy hair to go with that? Do you have pointy hair? So, cooperation. Oddly enough, for people that spend a lot of our time dealing with ways to make things communicate, we tend to be pretty bad at actually communicating with each other, and even worse at communicating with people that don't seem to speak the same language. Okay, sorry, that was your beverage as opposed to a comment. And here's something that I think only one person here is actually going to enjoy. All right, anyone else enjoy documentation? You guys are really weirding me out today. And that's another point, actually. Documentation is totally and completely useless if it ends up something like this, which has clearly been sitting around since people routinely bound books in leather, and may be legible or may not be, but is very likely not very useful. So, common ground. Again, we've just gone through a set of things that you should really try to do while you're putting this stuff together. And these are properties that you want to look at when you're talking about requirements and specifications. Yes, that is goats. Haven't you always wanted to put underwear on a goat? What's wrong with you? No comment. So, you know, issue obfuscation. Try to be clear. Use plain, normal, ordinary English. Although I have to admit that this is one way of getting to security because none of you can figure out what it actually says. But that doesn't help with cooperation or participation or any of these lovely things. When you're working on this sort of thing, go for stuff that's appropriate. I don't know that a fish needs a bicycle, and if anyone has a fish that needs a bicycle, I'd really like to see it and find out whether it's actually growing legs. Brevity is, of course, the soul of wit. It is incumbent upon oneself to continue at a reasonable length about any topic that happens to come to mind that seems to bear somehow on the item at hand. There's something to be said for being succinct. People don't get nearly so bored, and people will actually read what you wrote or listen to you when you say it. Fortunately, none of you seem to have tuned out yet. Tuned out more than normal. So, oddly enough, when you're dealing with people, they seem to like to be asked as opposed to being told. Given the number of people that have surprised me already today, I was about to say I'm willing to bet that if I asked everybody to stand up and wave, they wouldn't. But you've all been surprising me, so I'm not actually going to ask you to do that because you probably would, just to be difficult. That would be a first. I did, but I also said that I wanted you to, you know, answer questions while I was at it. And you've actually either been answering them completely sideways just to be difficult, or you've, well, gotten weird on me. Well, you see, I wanted to specify a roughly spherical sysadmin of uniform density.
On a frictionless surface.
Well, a frictionless sysadmin would be strange. This is true. Please don't. Thank you. So it's always useful to agree, although you'll notice in this case I was actually telling, not asking. Once again, strange to say, it's actually good to talk to other people and agree with them, even if the agreement happens to be, well, I disagree with you, but I suppose we have to agree to keep on moving. I disagree that you're being completely difficult, just mostly. And no surprises. Because really, surprises are the things that wake you up at 3 in the morning, or that you look at and you say, you can't be serious. I'm willing to bet that back in, 2002-ish, when Microsoft decided to move Hotmail to Windows, the first response out of the Unix guys, FreeBSD guys who were running their systems at the time was, are you out of your cotton-picking mind? This is, well, not too much of a surprise since we've been bought by Microsoft, but surprising. Sorry? You know, they actually have a case study up on their website now that doesn't actually mention the number of tries. It only talks about the successful one. It's actually a fascinating read. I didn't realize that there were so many things that somehow worked better on Windows in large clusters as opposed to smaller numbers of Unix boxes. So, why is essentially the core of where you start for all of this stuff. You have your goal, you want to know why you're doing this stuff. You want your goal to be something fairly understandable. You know, a summary, one or two sentences that anyone can understand. I'm sure that a number of people here have heard something along the lines of, well, you know, we need to automate, we want to do more stuff, fewer people, blah, blah. I'm not sure how many of you have actually seen it as, we need to automate to do more work with less people versus, we need to synergize our core competencies with advanced enterprise-specific hot software to increase overall productivity while maintaining or reducing existing overhead. Bingo. Yeah. I'm not going to comment. I do work for a large enterprise, but I am not going to comment. Besides, it wins at bingo.
I'm pretty sure that was my job description at one point.
Which one?
The bottom one.
So you synergize for a living?
Not anymore. I work for a real company now.
Okay.
Well, I guess I still do.
Okay, so you synergize for a real company. So once
just
we
with fewer buzzwords.
So once we know why we're doing this, we need to know what we're doing, because, you know, goals and such are all very nice, but when you have a single sentence that says we're doing blah, it doesn't actually say anything specifically detailed about what you're trying to do. So what is your requirements? You want to clarify your goals, define your audience, figure out who you're talking to. I certainly wouldn't make cracks about Windows at certain parts of the company that I work for because that would be inappropriate to the audience. You want to describe success and set limits. Now, focus is important because you need to take this lovely huge goal that you've got and say, let's narrow that down some. Let's figure out what we really mean when we say we want to automate everything and get rid of people. What's everything? What's automation? I think the get rid of people is fairly self-explanatory. Hopefully everyone else does. So audience is actually different things because the people that care may actually not be the people that need to be involved or the people that are stuck with the end results. If we go back to Hotmail, we know that the people that were involved were, well, okay, the people who cared were somewhat higher up at Microsoft. The people who were involved were, I'm running out of a tactful word. Anyone have a tactful word for me?
No. Unhappy.
Unhappy? And actually, the consumers also ended up being unhappy, at least the first few times that we've now apparently forgotten about, according to the corporate memory. Now, it sounds dumb to say you need to know what your success is, because surely everyone knows when they're done what they're doing, right? I see heads shaking and heads bobbing. So how many people know when they're actually done something? How can you tell that you've done it right? So in other words, you figured you were going to do something, you thought you knew what success was, and lo and behold, success ran off that way, and you're still heading this way.
We call it mission creep.
So that's where things like limits come in. limiting scope, limiting people, hopefully the people involved sometimes. Sometimes you have limitations because people aren't going to be around. Things, I'm using things as a generic for servers because, well, servers, routers, firewalls, things that get plugged into the wall, stuff. Then, of course, money tends to be a limiting factor. And time. Because, you know, it's really, really hard to, say, roll out 20,000 new PCs fully loaded in a couple of months. Desktops. Anyone think that they can do that? So this is the good, fast, cheap pick two. Sorry?
That's generous.
Yeah. So it's kind of important for requirements for your what to be realistic. I know that this is a novel concept, but, well, it is important to say this is what we're trying to do and here's how we can figure it out. So saying hardware must never fail is, how shall I put it, it's something that clearly does not come from the technical side of the house. You want them to be relevant. Because while I think the kittens are far more interesting and entertaining, they probably don't have anything to do with the things that I'm doing for work. They would improve the day. No, kitten-powered servers would be something else. But they do have a piano that plays when you smack the kittens. You want things that are measurable. So setting your uptime, saying, this is what we're measuring to, this is how we can tell we've gotten to our goals in the first place. How many people here have heard some equivalent to stuff can't break as a requirement? And how many of you have managed to come up with something where stuff doesn't break? So we're back to the roughly spherical sysadmin of uniform density? See, this is part of the problem, is what the hell is break anyways? Apart from when you all go running streaming outside so you can get something to eat. You're going to have to speak up because I didn't quite catch it. So unambiguous is useful, because apparently we should just have a good web server or the internet works. But if you can't actually measure it, it's kind of hard to say you've gotten there from here. And my idea of a good web server is probably different from, oh, say, Stevens or the gentleman back there who has comments, which are entertaining, and I have no idea who it is.
Gene.
So we went through why, we know what, how is the part where most of us actually end up getting started, which is specifications. Now, in theory at least, your specs should actually meet your requirements. In practice, they mostly do. They should stay within the limits you've been given, and they should be detailed enough that you can take the specifications and actually implement, as opposed to taking the specifications saying, what are these, and doing something. So, once again, we're talking about web servers because that's really low-hanging fruit. We're going to use Apache with Tomcat for dynamic web content, as opposed to we're going to use a web server. Well, that depends on what your web server is, doesn't it? My web server could be a spider.
Well, I think your chances are good. You have a chance of taking something else besides.
Well, but I have web servers all around my house. They actually make beautiful webs in the summer and keep the flies down. You can't run VI on a Cray. And why do you think it's not appropriate to use a Cray for your web server then? You can run VI on an AS400. So there's appropriate and appropriate, and then there's things you'd really rather not deal with at all. And sane. I don't know if anyone recognizes this particular picture.
Yes, I do.
Yep. I've actually seen those. I actually saw those when they were running, complete with the house fans standing in front of them, trying to blow cool air on the front of them. It gave a completely new definition to hotspots in the data center. Sorry?
I have a fan in Monaco.
One fan? A really big fan? Bad sysadmin, don't do that. There were usually at least two things in there, plus a couple of drives, plus the cardboard to hold them up. So, after wandering through what makes reasonable requirements and specifications, more or less, where do they come from in the first place? Because I'm waving my hands about and saying, yes, we've got these things, aren't they great? These are what they should look like. Now, I'm going to tell a story, because I like telling stories. No, you might throw it. So we have our protagonists, our key stakeholders, our lovely people that are at the center of the story, who are, as you can see, a lovely people, set of people, highly competent, you'd have great confidence in them, life is good. And they want to build a Death Star, because, you know, it would be really cool to have a Death Star. Who here wouldn't like to have a Death Star?
So they want to take What's the power bill on that?
I believe that they're harnessing black holes or something like that.
Not very well.
So they've got a simple goal, easily understood. Let's build a Death Star. So is this a good goal? Well, let me rephrase that. Is this a well-formed goal? Yes, no, hands, because really, I'm not reading expressions all that well. Sorry? Because it's cool. I mean, clearly, everybody knows it's cool, right? Well, see, the thing is, this is just my goal. We don't talk about planets per hour until we get into requirements. Does it have a single point of failure?
Does it need kidnapping?
We're done. Here it is, we're done.
Almost. Because the only thing they have to build with is pumpkins. A little bit larger than your apple, but close. So we have a requirement. We have to use pumpkins because that's all we've got. Good requirement, bad requirement?
It's a start.
No, it's a limitation. It's a requirement. Well, if all you have is to work with is pumpkins. Well, the only thing they have is pumpkins.
Are we allowed to turn the pumpkins into other things through trading and bargaining? Or is the specification, the structure, the Death Star must be made out of pumpkins?
Their building material is pumpkins. So, functionally, they're kind of stuck.
Well, do they have security?
If you find me a picture of Darth Vader wearing heels and with a magic wand, absolutely.
I've seen that picture.
You, sir, are falling under Rule 34.
There is an issue, though. It says use pumpkin. It doesn't say you can't use other things. And it doesn't say how many pumpkins you have to use. So having one pumpkin sitting on the landing dock is you have used pumpkins to complete the task.
It could be a very small Death Star.
The pumpkin could be the other controller stick that drives the ship.
So, you can build a Death Star out of a pumpkin.
Not so much Death or Star.
Okay, now who's being picky? Well, we didn't define death or star, or death star collectively.
I mean, you'd have to throw it really hard to kill anything.
Well, we never define functional requirements, so anything will match.
You could crush a mouse with it.
So, as you said, something's missing. Of course, in this case, it's a slightly different something. Because it would be really cool if it had lights. Now, once again, you could argue about whether this is actually even a good requirement versus perhaps a specification, probably not a goal. But hey, we'll say lights for now. Our rocket scientists discovered a problem, of course, with the whole idea of having lights in there, which is there's actually no space for lights in a pumpkin. Strange to say. So, we need an empty pumpkin. Also a roughly spherical one, but that's going off in a different direction. And I can point you at the URL to look up the instructions that require a roughly spherical pumpkin at some point. Clearly, this is not uniform density, but it is kind of icky.
You bake those, you've got a snack.
We didn't say anything about snacks.
Smoke-free.
Exactly. So, we have a tool that will do the job, however, as opposed to using bare hands. Let's use a spoon. Roughly spherical? Actually, I have lidded spoons, which are roughly spherical. The spoons that you use for tea.
You do not scrape out a pumpkin with a
No, tea does not enter this requirement. Spoons do. Well, as it turns out, lo and behold, the spoon doesn't work all that well for cleaning up pumpkins, which I'm sure comes as no surprise to anybody. Who here has cleaned up pumpkins? Okay. So there's enough people here that I'm not actually talking about something weird, peculiar, and strange that nobody here has ever done. Well, okay, maybe I'm talking about something weird and strange, but neither here nor there. So we have a problem. And it turns out that most of the time when you run into a problem with your requirements or specifications, what you want to do is go back and say, are these the right requirements or are these the right specifications? Strange as it may seem, it gets back to that whole communication, participation sort of thing. So the spoon doesn't seem to be the right tool for the job. Now, this is a point where things very, very often go off the rails, because we run into a problem, and it's a pain in the keister to go back and say, hey guys, can we change the requirements of the specifications? Because, you know, that's going to mean talking to people, it might mean changing things, it's annoying. So, the particular bright people that I'm thinking of took the spoon and wandered off with it and came back and said, here, try this spoon. Which, the same spoon, slightly modified. Everything looks to be perfectly normal. Well, fairly normal. And it turns out that it's working much, much better for a little bit. Because if you sharpen a spoon, it cuts through pumpkins beautifully. Unfortunately, if you sharpen a spoon, it also cuts through people beautifully.
That's a problem.
Well, yes. Exactly. So we have a surprising event running to the end of this, which is specifically because I'm actually looking for a way to cheerfully introduce reality. Sorry. Would you prefer to know that the people who tried to cut through their pumpkin with a spoon actually had to go to the hospital and had the joy of trying to check into triage saying, Hi, I cut my hand open with a spoon.
While building a Death Star?
I think they left out the Death Star part. But, yeah. So, in reality, when you come to looking at your requirements and specifications and goals, there's a couple of different choices. You can build your own, which is rewarding in some respects, because then you can actually go through the process with everyone around and figure out what you're doing, talk back and forth, agree. You can buy. My organization would be happy to help you with that for a substantial fee. Or you can borrow. Because, hey, we've all done something pretty similar, and it's not that hard to find someone that's gone through the process and get their specifications, requirements, and move from there. See? However, our major problems, when it comes all the way right down to it, boil down to communication, confusion, and consternation. I thought I'd try something different from fear, uncertainty, and doubt for a change. So, there are very frequently communication problems. Yes, it's a typewriter. You think the typewriter is beautiful? Okay. So, communication problems. Scope creep is very, very definitely one of the communication problems, because it's saying, yeah, we can squish this a little further down, no big problem. The only way I know to deal with scope creep boils down to saying no, which can be a challenge, or documenting. And I know that documenting may not be your favorite thing, but saying, here's the requirements we had, here's the specifications we have, you want us to do something that's outside of this. If you're lucky, you can say, we need to change things, we should either rejig the requirements or the specifications. If you're less lucky, you can just say, hey, look, here's this laundry list of things that we did that were extra. And when it comes back to saying, yes, we know the project that we're working on happens to be kind of a little bit late, you can at least say, and here's the list of reasons why. How many people here have given in to the temptation to do just one thing because it's not that big? And how many of you have ended up with a second thing after that one that really isn't that big and it shouldn't make that much of a difference? It's a bit of it's a slippery slope. One of my favorites for the communication side is actually ask mom, ask dad. We came over, we asked you how things were going, you told us this is the requirements of the end of specification. You said, I don't like that, and went over and asked the guy working beside me. Now, ideally, you'd say, yeah, okay, we'll deal with this, we'll have a single point of contact, we'll talk to each other. How many of you have done the single point of contact thing and had it work? How many of you are the single point of contact? How many of you have nothing to do with any of this and are just here filling time because it's Friday and you have no brain? No, zombies are later. So, I'm ignoring you is actually a favorite one for enterprise politics. You didn't format your request properly, you sent it to the wrong place, or we don't have to help you, we don't have enough billable hours or time or what have you. And unfortunately, this one falls under playing politics. If you're lucky, you say to them, I really need this from you, could you kindly make time? If you happen to be being friendly and asking people, it works really well. If you say to them, you, give me this right now. Must you people be so reliably difficult? I have never done that. I'm maligned. I shall faint. Darth Vader wears gloves. He leaves no fingerprints anyhow. So sometimes you can deal with it by talking to the person directly. Sometimes you're kind of stuck with either complaining to your manager or their manager. And sometimes you do something that causes other problems, namely considering them to be damaged and routing around them. So I'm kind of fond of confusion, otherwise I wouldn't have taken this picture. It makes perfect sense once you look at it in fair detail, but the first glance is not really conducive to driving safely. So, fuzzy language. If I say, we need a white powdery substance, what am I going to end up with?
Coffee mate.
Dandruff.
A traffic jam? I don't know where you live. I don't want to know. So it's kind of important to ask for clarification early and often so you can figure out that you're actually talking about the same thing. I had written up a slide about the white powdery substance, and then I realized that I'm crossing a border when I travel, and perhaps I really, really don't want to have slides talking about white powdery substances.
You have a lot of friends in Colombia.
D.C.? It's amazing what you can import or export. So as far as the language goes, it's both a question for what you get from other people, but also for what you're saying. We tend to have little technical details with craft knowledge and craft-specific language. If I say to most of the people here, I really need a headless pizza box, how many people here know what I'm talking about? So about half the room. Somebody who doesn't know what I'm talking about, what do you think I'm on about? Has your actual pizza actually arrived with a head on it?
Shorthand for beer and pizza.
Rules lawyers. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition. And of course, you can have people that are a little out of touch with reality. We seem to be proving today that I'm out of touch with reality for about 40% of the room here. Or you're just being difficult. It could be either. So out of touch with reality can be easy to deal with, hard to deal with, or impossible to deal with. I'm very, very fond of the person who wanted a 10 millisecond round trip time between New York and San Francisco. I can't change the laws of physics.
Scotty,
you're a cis admin.
Do I look like a Scottish male engineer? And then, of course, our favorite from a geek point of view, our solutions looking for a problem. Because clearly we should be using Emacs for everything. I'm in a mixed marriage. I use VI, he uses Emacs. And then, of course, there's consternation. Bad assumptions are always fun. And I have a story about that a little bit further on, so I'm just going to hand wave at the slide and keep moving. Missing limits can be really fun. Well, we all have infinite budget, right? And as many man-hours as we need?
As many man-hours as they need.
And if we have a late project, we should add more manpower to it, because clearly, adding manpower to a late project will make it...
More later.
Well, less mythical or more mythical? And then you've got death from above, which is really, really hard to deal with, also known as, hey, by the way, we're doing this. To which the response is very often, we're doing what? Well, we could move it to Wednesday if Tuesday's bad. But it will be done by then, right? We have enough time to order the hardware and all that. If you have to ask what could possibly go wrong, you're already halfway down the wrong path. So ultimately, your choice with all of these, though, boils down to get clarification, change it, or ignore it. And once again, no matter what you decide to do, you're really, really, really going to want to document what you're doing so you can say, I asked for clarification, I got it, I didn't. We need to change this, which sometimes it changes, sometimes it doesn't. And if you've decided to ignore it, you should at least say, hey, by the way, we're going to ignore this. Pretty similar. Sometimes it aborts, sometimes it retries, and yeah, well, yes. So I've got this great goal here, don't I? So is this a good goal? So what is the cloud anyhow?
Whatever you want, apparently.
It's the place you're going to move everything to.
It's important to set context. Of course, everything is its own set of interesting.
Everything is a service. Humans is a service.
Well, I mean, clearly, whatever it is a service, you should be able to get it. Only in some countries. Oh, sorry, I misplaced the slide. My apologies. I was going to talk about whether or not that's actually a good goal, even with the variety of extra information, but I've clearly lost a slide somewhere along with my mind. So we'll look at application modernization instead. Anyone work with these? Not currently. I mean, has anyone dealt with these at all? All 24 function keys of it. Yeah. So we have an admirable goal, do you think? Yes, no? Good goal? What's wrong with it?
They're already in the 21st century. It's vague.
What problem is it solving?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do?
Why do we want to bring the application?
What about the tools we'll need to bring the application management tools into the 21st century?
Which calendar would be good at the application?
Logic. You're bringing logic into this. We can't possibly be having this. And who's going to be involved? Now, I should clarify that in this particular case, I'm actually thinking of a very specific example where I'm not going to name names, and there's a reason I'm being vague about the who's involved. But we have an external contractor, we have the people managing the systems, and we have the application owners, who, of course, are not the same people as the people managing the systems. But everyone agrees, eventually, that it's a great idea to modernize. So we have a requirement that one could also consider to be a goal, depending on how you look at it, to replace our legacy applications with the current supported common off-the-shelf software. Good, bad? So when we start getting down to the nitty-gritty, yes, I know I'm being vague here, because if I give details, it'll be a little too obvious, actually. We're going to move to something Windows, click and drag interface, really pretty. Nothing like that old clunker at the front of this particular section. Sound good?
Is that 2003 and 2008, or 2003 or 2000?
Or divided by. So it turns out we actually have a minor technical detail, which they found out when they went to implement. So this is actually text. It turns out that if you have a worldwide network all communicating with each other, and you decide that you're going to move to a lovely GUI-based setup for all of your application management, things change. In fact, the amount of traffic that you're generating all of a sudden changes dramatically. And apparently this didn't actually occur to anybody, because when they went through the whole requirement thing, they didn't think about networks, since it's just an application problem. I don't know about nobody. Nobody on the project. Well, the application owners were using 3270, so they understood it, and clearly everyone else understands it because. So does mine, a Mac. But the end result was actually pretty spectacular. The whole thing came down in a crashing pile of melt, because the 3270 is purely text-based and takes, well, it was designed to run over very slow lines. Actually, does anyone know what the specs on those were? Because I did not find it when I was looking it up. Very slow lines, fails miserably, everything melts down, project goes to hell in a handbasket. Now, you would think that if you're going to do something like this, that you would say, yeah, cool, let's rejig, let's go back and change our requirements and specifications. Do you think this happened? I like to ask for optimism. This is true. So when it comes down to it, which parts did they really, really miss out on in terms of getting their requirements done? Anyone?
Infrastructure.
So bad audience, kind of forgot to bring in the people that ran things underneath.
User interface, VF3 is really efficient. Associated dependencies.
Sorry? Yep. Because, as we all know, everybody's just like them. So if it works in one place, it works absolutely everywhere, and there's no change in the environment whatsoever. So is this familiar to anybody? A minor technical detail. So, at which point in the process did we fail? Allow me to rephrase that. Orbit insertion is an implementation detail. So, do we fail with our goal? Did we fail in requirements, specifications, or all of the above? And of course, we can see that there were also some communication problems, which actually you'll find in pretty much all of the requirements and specification examples that I have here have communication issues. The other thing is there's a really bad assumption in here, which is everyone uses the same units as me. Because I know I use metric or I use imperial, and clearly everybody else does exactly the same. Anyone know what RFP stands for?
Request for Proposal.
So there's a well-known set of stories about rock stars who are really, really fond of asking for things like a bowl of blue M&Ms in the bottom of their contract. And the whole point behind that is actually not, well, some of the point is being picky. Some of the point is using it as a checksum for details. Anyone know what these RFCs are? IP over avian carriers and the update to it. Yep. And these have actually showed up in a bunch of RFPs, just to see whether people have read far enough down into the detailed specifications to be able to go back and say, yep, I can meet your requirement for being RFC 1149 compatible. As far as I know, the only one that's actually answered back with something like that is Juniper, who say that they are, in fact, compatible if you provide the correct hardware.
Fair statement.
Anyone been involved in cleaning up a data center? For some values of cleanup. So this is the goal that they started out with. Is it good or bad? So who gets involved with this project? Systems engineering, network engineering, project management, systems and network operations. Are we missing anyone? Facilities people. Why would you want facilities people? All they have to do is take stuff out, right? A dumpster, usually.
How about the developers who haven't told you that they're actually still using that system?
That never happens.
Is it even legal to throw computers into a dumpster?
Depends on where you are.
So I was working with that.
You work? So, general requirements. Figure out what's not used, figure out what's being decommissioned, and then remove it from the data center floor. Nice and easy, right? Is that a requirement or a specification?
No, it's a spec.
So, a couple of specs, not a complete list, but we'll get the guys in the NOC to do all the work, figuring out what is or isn't used. Something I'm sure nobody who's ever worked in a NOC has run into before. I don't know why you think this is going to end badly. So lo and behold, there is in fact a minor technical detail involved. It turns out that when the facilities people got involved, they learned something really interesting and new about how systems and network people see stuff in cabinets and how facilities people see stuff in cabinets. Turns out the system and network people say, hey, look, I've got these devices in cabinets. They're separate. The facilities guys, on the other hand, said, we've got these cabinets with stuff in them. The cabinet is the unit. So we have our list here, and that means we should remove this rack and check to see that the contents match the inventory.
By rack number.
They caught them on the second one. Just because they took down part of the core network doesn't mean it was a problem. Well, they shouldn't have had the cabinets that close together, like in the same data center, you know.
Shouldn't have numbered them.
Obfuscation for security.
Start at zero or one.
So it isn't really relevant to the point you're trying to make, but the question I have is, did the operations people do a poor job of specifying, you know, rack number one, servers 3, 7, and 9, or did the
facilities people understood it as rack number 7, check to make sure the inventory matches.
So when they found there was more in the rack than there was supposed to be, they didn't care.
Well, there was a failure there, among others.
Were they thinking that the rack was the inventory and not the contents of the rack?
Basically, yes. They dealt in units of rack, as opposed to dealing in units of server. But why do you need to know anything more? All facilities management need to do is remove the equipment that they're told to remove.
Right, but it's the loss of information up and down the management chain.
They probably thought they were doing somebody a favor by moving the heavy ass racks around.
So what kind of failures do we have here? Okay, I grant you they are amusing failures. It was much more amusing about a month after the failure, once we finished going through all of the joy and fun thereof. So communication, of course, but also in very much when you're starting to get into language problems with assumptions about, yeah, I know a unit is clearly a server, which if they'd actually involved the right audience in the first place, this wouldn't have been a problem. But that's neither here nor there at this point.
It's also an implementation issue because there should have been somebody there with them as they were removing it to check off.
If I remember the incident correctly, it boiled down to, but we've already checked the list, so we know it's correct. They had checked the list.
The list isn't the problem.
Actually, it's very common for data centers to have facilities management people that deal with moving racks around, putting servers in the racks, hauling cables, that type of thing.
Yes, allowing people like us onto the raised floor might be a risk.
Well, Lord only knows what you might do.
That's right.
It could be terrible. Okay, I'm speaking even faster than normal. And this is the guy who actually carves the Death Star. His quote to me was, when I asked for permission to use the pictures, was, sure, when you're talking about requirements and specifications, are you using me as a good example or a bad example? Questions, comments? Dead silence? So some of this comes down to language. So when someone says to you, I want to do blar, actually, pick an example. What do you want to do? Why are you doing this?
The data center. That's a good one. You've got old equipment hanging out in the racks, and you get rid of it.
Okay, that goes backwards, but it doesn't go forward. So when you say, in how do you do it? So you've got your why. Now, when you decide that you want to remove this equipment, what are the things you think that you're going to have to do, and who do you think you have to talk to? Is that something you could tell me more or less off the top of your head?
My case is really easy. It's just go down there and do it, because I'm the only guy.
Do you want to wander up to the mic? I'm not sure if people can hear you.
I was saying that my case is really easy because I'm a small shop and none of these other people issues even fall in.
So in general, you start with your goal or your why, and if you're doing a large project, there's typically somebody that really cares about this project. They're the person that's going to end up driving it. They may or may not be the person that ends up making the final decision about it. But one way or another, it's typically incumbent on that person to say, okay, we've got this thing that we want to do. We know our why. Let me think of a couple of things around this that I can at least get people starting to talk about. You know, who do I think I need to involve? Which is something that is usually straightforward, even if you can't stand documentation or process or anything like that. If only to say, yeah, there's that guy in facilities who never lets me into the data center, so I guess I have to talk to him. And basically, you take the people that you know of, find something that is going to give them a start to discuss, because all of us are really good at saying, no, that requirement sucks. And we'll cheerfully say it ad nauseum, in fact. And once you have a place for people to start to discuss, even if it's wrong, then you'll start hearing things like, well, you know, we really should do this, we could do this, we must do that, we can't do that. So when you're hearing things like can't, you're talking about a limit, typically. When you're hearing must, you're talking more often about something like a requirement. You know, we must remove the unused and decommissioned equipment. We're running out of power. we should remove the old equipment and refresh it because it would be better for power. But should and must are not really the same thing. And when you're saying should, you're saying, yeah, it would be really kind of cool if I could do this. But maybe we have money, maybe we don't. But we've got this set of things that we're thinking, yeah, okay. So we've got this list of we should do this, we must do that, we must not do the other. And getting to the whole question of communication and audience, then you go back and forth to people and say, hey, can you tell me something about your part in this? Generally, if you say we're going to do the, if I tell the facilities guy, we're going to remove racks, he's probably going to say, you're trying to do my job and I'm sure you're going to do it wrong, piss off. On the other hand, if I wander over and say, hey, you know, I've got a bunch of stuff I'd like to get out of the data center, how would you do that? Help me understand this. What do you need from me? What should I get from you? And then, lo and behold, the person that really cares about all of this, who has, of course, been documenting continually, right, gets to say, okay, now that we've come to this list of things, let's horse trade. You want me to pay you $500 per rack, transferred funny money, but, you know, $500 per rack to remove stuff. My budget, on the other hand, doesn't get there from here. So how do we balance these? What do I give up? Do you give up something? And back and forth horse trading. Figuring out where to stop can be interesting. But typically the place you stop when you're dealing with requirements or specs is when you're going back and forth about whether it's better to use Emacs or VI or VI or Emacs in relative terms, and just stick with the requirement is that we have a text editor. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
This is an interesting comment in my experience. The people I find who have the easiest time learning this way of thinking are people who've done time in military service. And after asking for a while, I finally figured it out. This is an operational briefing. Everything you've described, background, why are we doing this? Why are we going to this place? What are we supposed to do there? What are we allowed to do when we're there? What equipment will we have? What's our exit plan if things go bad? And how do we declare that we've had a successful mission?
No, we don't blow things up. We have
maybe you don't.
We have temporary difficulties with our project. Surmountable, as always.
As background here for people who don't know me, I'm not a system administrator, I'm a technical writer. Sometimes I say I'm the technical writer at LISA, but that's rarely true. And my comment and sort of a question. Early in the talk, you were talking about how do you know when you've met your goals, and people were, you know, saying interesting things about, well, the goals shift on you and the goals go here. In my work, it's more an issue of compromising the goals. I mean, obviously I'm just a tech writer, but it seems as I say that every day I make one compromise or another. A compromise from how thoroughly we need to document this, when you set your goals and you get very specific about we need to have an example that shows X, Y, and Z, we need to have to explain what the multipath mappings, and for one reason, I did, for one reason or another, you can't get that information or it doesn't happen and the deadline's there, the deadline's immovable, the resources aren't there. So it's not that my goals shift, but that they get compromised and compromised and compromised. So that was sort of my comment. I guess my question is, does this apply to system administration as well? Because I would think that would be more black and white.
To absolutely everybody.
And then my second half of the question is, and how do you avoid feeling like every compromise eats at your soul? I know that's a very dramatic way to put it, but often that's actually the most distressing thing to me about my job. When you feel you're not doing what you could do, you're not achieving your goals because external forces made you compromise. Again, I'm sure the parallels are there. What can you do to sleep well at night?
So what I would say is, one of the things that always bothers me about that is when it's not clear that you've actually been compromising. So when people look at it and go, okay, we didn't quite end up with what we wanted to because stuff went somewhere, but we don't know why and we don't care why, versus we've made a clear choice about this. We've said, unfortunately, the trade-offs are all here. We're going to have to make a trade-off. But let's go back and say, you know those goals that we had or those requirements that we had? We have to change them because we have these limits that we've run into. And I don't think I've been probably as clear as I should have been that a lot of this does end up being an iterative process. So you go through your requirements and say, hang on a second, with these requirements, there's no way in hell that we can match that goal. I mean, I have a budget of, say, $100,000. Can I build a Death Star? Well, some of them, yes. Can I build one that's in outer space? No. And then that's a matter of going back and saying, okay, we need to change what our expectations are, change what our requirements are. And I'm not going to argue that it's not frustrating, but at least at that point, you're not saying I'm not meeting them. You're saying we've run into something. As a result, we have to change what we're doing back here and continue. So I'm not sure if that answers the question or not. Oh, God, no.
Hi, John Detke from PDI DreamWorks. I was wondering if you had sort of rules of thumb or guidelines for when, as sysadmins, we do a lot of research because we're not really sure what we're going to do, so we come up with some specifications, but since we're not sure, they change as we find out, well, Puppet can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do you go back and change the specs? Do you change the whole goals? I mean, are there guidelines for how to do that ahead of time without going crazy?
So I'd say some of it depends on how spectacular your failure is, your failure mode is. If it's, we can't do this at all, then you've had a failure just after the goal point, which means that you really probably want to go back and say, is this goal realistic at all? Is this something we can do? If you're looking at something where you've gotten into the process of doing your requirements or specifications, one of the things that I like to do with them is say, this is a requirement I absolutely have to have, no question, nothing. If we can't do this, we're going to just stop the project until we can figure out what to do. And being able to say, here are my absolute blocking points, stopping points, life goes to hell in a handbasket if we don't have this, makes it easier to identify, at least in that case, this is where we have to stop and reconsider and figure out what we're going to do. Typically, it ends up being something of a judgment call around, is this a major problem or a minor problem? I don't know in your case whether it's a major or minor problem.
Well, it's sort of neither. It's if you're doing research, if the goal is to have a config management system,
yeah.
And so at some phase you're looking at all the ones that are out there.
So
how you got requirements, but
so would it be safe to say that you have a list of requirements where you could go ticky ticky ticky? Yes, it matches. No, it doesn't.
Yes, but what do you do when each has a 2/3 match? I guess
it sounds to me like you need a requirement that everything needs to be that whatever you choose has to have better than a 2/3 match.
Okay, thanks.
I know it sounds recursive, but it's essentially
if
that's where you're
process.
Stopping. Yeah.
I mean, you just have to keep going through and seeing which one matches. But I wondered if there was, if there's guidelines for at what point you do that kind of revision. And I guess it sort of depends on.
Yeah. So by the time that you're actually testing them, you're long past the requirement stage, and specifications for that matter, and into actually implementing. And if you discover when you're implementing that, lo and behold, you can't match your requirements, then that would very definitely be a signal to go back and say, let's look at our requirements, reconsider, see if we still need all of these or not.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Chris Allison, Northeastern University. I know in my experience, at least from having worked in a couple of universities, that I find myself a lot asking why, and not even asking why, but asking what are you trying to accomplish?
Yes.
When someone comes and asks me something. So I'm wondering if you could speak to the role of why and the presence of what are you trying to accomplish within the context of your talk. It seems to me as though that your talk assumes that that process has already happened. Is that a correct assumption, would you say?
It assumes that very often by the time it gets to the folks at our level, somebody's come up with this lovely sounding comment, which may or may not be helpful, that we're supposed to aim for. And more often than not, what we're stuck with is we've got this statement. What can we make out of it? You know, they've said that we're supposed to move everything into the cloud. This is a great goal, but it's so imprecise that there's no way that we can actually work with it. We need to distill it down to something where we can say, yeah, we need to build ourselves an internal cloud to handle people as a service. And then going back and double checking that with the person who's driving the project or who's spectacularly interested in it, enough so to have handed you this goal in the first place.
So it sounds like you're assuming or speaking about a structure wherein the process of doing the conversation of what are you trying to accomplish, what's the actual end goal here, you know, we're building a Death Star because we want to crush the Rebel Alliance or because we, you know, need to be able to get from one end of the galaxy to the other very quickly, that's already happened. And this is just the design stage of implementing the decision that's already been made.
That would be why it's talking about requirements and specifications okay. as opposed to goals, requirements, and specifications. But it's kind of hard to talk about requirements and specifications without saying, yes, there's this thing in front of them. Because otherwise you're trying to say, yeah, I have a requirement for something to match something. Functionally, though, as far as the process of getting to a decent why goes, it's fairly similar to the process of your requirements in the first place. And it's not unusual to actually end up mixing the two of them, where you're saying, we want to understand what you want to do or why you want to do it, and also, give us some idea of... Okay, that was completely incoherent. It basically boils down to talking to them to find out where they're heading for, what they're trying to do, and some of that ends up being goals, some ends up being requirements, some of it may actually end up being specifications. And the whole process, especially if it's within a single organization, can be fairly compressed. The problem you end up with when you do that is that it can be very hard to separate out the why from the what from the how. So you end up with things like, we're going to solve all of our problems with a cray. Now we don't know what the problems are, and we don't know that the cray will solve them. But you've basically jumped from idea to solution.
Right, and that sounds like something having gone wrong to me. But I understand what you're driving at, and I value it, so thank you.
Any other questions? We have plenty of time. Okay, let's thank our speaker.
Do you have any favorite tools for capturing all this stuff and manipulating it?
My favorite tool versus the tools I end up using at work?
Sure, yes. The ones you think would be best without the constraint of thou shalt use Microsoft or whatever.
I'm a Mac user for my personal stuff, and I found something like Omni Outliner is actually really good for that because it lets me stage where I'm going and what I'm doing. And it makes it really easy to pull out stuff like there's a relationship or here's this little lump of stuff that I need to pull together. However, in a corporate environment, that would be Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Visio, Project.
I've got Omni Outliner. That was it.
So very much pick your poison for that. But if you are organized about what you're thinking, VI works just fine. I actually used VI to set up this in terms of what I wanted the outline to be.
Thanks.
Shall we try that again?
Yeah.